U.S. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden says is going to win the race for the White House. He's expanding his lead over President Trump in key states. Several prominent U.S. Republicans backed President Trump's claims of election fraud, while some others distanced themselves from his stance. Iran announces new restrictions for businesses as part of efforts to tackle the growing number of COVID-19 cases and deaths. Greetings and a warm welcome to World News. Good to have you with us. Now, starting with U.S. election news, Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden has once again addressed the nation while his lead is growing in several battleground states in the race for the White House.
We're going to win this race. Just look at what has happened since yesterday. 24 hours, we were behind in Georgia. Now we're ahead, and we're going to win that state. 24 hours ago, we were behind in Pennsylvania, and we are going to win Pennsylvania. And now we're ahead, but we're winning in Arizona, winning in Nevada. And in fact, our lead just doubled in Nevada.
Biden urged American people to be patient and wait for all the ballots to be counted. He stressed the purpose of American politics should be solving problems, not fanning the flames of conflict. The former vice president was speaking from his hometown state of Delaware. This is while the campaign of incumbent President Donald Trump has filed lawsuits to challenge the vote counts and results in several states. Trump supporters have also held rallies outside ballot counting centers in different cities, demanding a recount. Protesters stress Trump's allegation that Democrats have rigged the vote. In Arizona, some of the Trump supporters were seen carrying firearms. In Pennsylvania, the administrators called for the disqualification of delayed mail-in ballots, but the state's apex court rejected their claims. Trump himself has vowed to continue the fighting, saying that he has no plans to concede. Tensions growing as the vote counting is ongoing in several swing states where a record number of people cast their ballots by mail. While the votes are still being counted, the U.S. is also increasingly scrutinized for legitimacy. The country's perpetually high voter abstention rates have also generated regular doubts about a level of domestic approval of their political process. Rami Mazzari has more from Chicago.
The United States presidential vote continues to be tabulated amid claims of fraud and a lack of transparency. Challenger Joe Biden appears to have a small lead, but a final vote tally seems days away to many. After that, long and torturous court battles could ensue, creating more animosity in an already deeply divided nation.
In a bit of good news, voter turnout is projected to be the highest since the year 1900. In bad news, it's only going to be about 65%, which would still be just below the average rate among developed countries.
Since the 1970s, voter turnout has averaged just 54%. By comparison, since 1997, Iran's presidential turnout rate has been 74%. The low turnout is attributed to a massive alienation from the political process among America's poor and minority classes.
Democrat, Republican, conservative is like voting for Lucifer, Satan, and the devil. You'll catch hell with all three. Politically, it's not going to make any difference. I vote. I've always voted. But if you ask me if I really believe that Democrats, if they get in charge, the reality of what happens to poor people and black people in this country, if there's going to be some major change, my answer to that is absolutely not.
Analysts say that if the 2020 presidential election is not decided fairly and transparently, it could drop voter turnout for a generation. Minorities pinned major hopes on Donald Trump's predecessor, but his perceived failures has disillusioned many, and younger voters especially.
Democrats have been in charge and things have not gotten any better. When President Barack Obama was president of the United States, nothing changed for black people. So why would I somehow believe that President Joe Biden is somehow going to change what is systemically wrong in this country?
America's Latino population is now almost 50% higher than the African-American population. Yet Latino voter turnout is a whopping 40% lower than the combined rate of whites and blacks. Latinos often decry how they are virtually invisible in American culture and how they hold very few positions of political power, fueling abstention. The unprecedented turnout of 2020 is being attributed to the controversial use of mail-in ballots, whose legitimacy will seemingly be publicly decided by the time this election is over. Perhaps mail-in ballots increase opportunities for fraud, but perhaps they are a valid tool which can be used to help solve the perpetually high abstention rates in the United States. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Now, the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives has called Democratic President candidate Joe Biden president-elect, even though the vote count against some battleground states continues.
President-elect Biden has a strong mandate to lead, and he'll have a strong Democratic House with him, and many Democrats in the Senate.
A top Democrat, Nancy Pelosi, says it's clear that Biden will be the next president of the United States, hailing him as a unifier. She also referred to current President Donald Trump as a lame duck. Pelosi warned, however, that Trump will try to, quote, destroy the credibility of the election and do mischief as long as he remains in office. Now, in the meantime, several prominent Republicans have rallied behind President Donald Trump over his claims that Democrats are using illegal votes in an attempt to steal the election.
I think you're going to see in the next 48 hours real evidence of systematic voting irregularities. There's a complaint filed by the U.S. Attorney to the U.S. Attorney in Michigan, someone, I think, in the post office, who was told to backdate ballots instead of November the 4th. It'd be November the 3rd, so they'd be counted. Democracy.
Well, Graham described the results in Philadelphia as crooked as a snake. Representative Kevin McCarthy, who leads the Republican minority in the House, says that the results are far from over. Senator Ted Cruz claims that Pennsylvania's Democratic Attorney General has ordered vote counting in Philadelphia to continue until Joe Biden wins. However, other Republicans distanced themselves from Trump's claims of fraud or adopted a more balanced stance. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says every legal vote should be counted, while illegally submitted ballots must not. Trump campaign has filed lawsuits in several states, reaching out to donors to raise at least $60 million to fund legal challenges. A journalist and political commentator, Richard Silverstein, says if elected to the White House, Joe Biden is likely to be what America needs in the long run.
Well, I think that Biden is a moderate, he's a pragmatic person, he's a calming influence. I don't think that he is a visionary. I don't think that he's got a lot of charisma. I think that he's someone who's going to try to devise a program and execute it and appoint talented and competent people to implement the program. I think that he is right now probably what America needs. I don't think that in the long run he is what America needs, but at this moment in time where we have a corrupt, corrosive, toxic atmosphere with tons of violence and threats of potential terrorist attacks from white supremacists who reject this outcome, I think that we need a calm, healing voice at this time to combat the poison that Trump is injecting.
Now, more comments. Political commentator Margaret Kimberly says the desire to get President Donald Trump out of office is the main reason for the huge turnout in the U.S. presidential election.
What is surprising is the fact that it's taken, this is now the third day of counting votes, but that's an indication of the huge turnout that was created, frankly, by Donald Trump and by the desire to get this man out of office so that many of those who sat out in 2016 were moved to get to the polls in 2020. But it's interesting, Biden appears to be headed to victory. It's much more difficult for Donald Trump to get there. And that is why he is calling these lawsuits, which I believe will be futile. We're going to have a Biden presidency, but that brings with it some challenges because there's a large number of voters who just want to get rid of Trump, who have not really asked much of Biden. And he is in a position, frankly, to create huge problems in this country and around the world.
Now, in other news, Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif says that Iran only values actions, not words, when it comes to dealings with the United States. Speaking to Latin American television network Telesur, Zarif said that there are obvious differences between President Donald Trump and his rival Joe Biden. However, he said that what's important for Iran is not the tone or the rhetoric, but the actions. Biden has promised to return to a 2015 nuclear deal between Iran and the world powers if elected president. Trump walked away from the accord in 2018, imposing tough sanctions on Iran. Zarif says that the U.S. has to gain a seat at the negotiating table if it wants to return to the deal. The top diplomat also noted that Washington needs to change its practice for the situation to change. Now, that's while the pandemic continues to rage across Europe, several countries on that continent reporting a new record high in their daily infections. Ukraine has reported more than 10,500 new cases, the highest single-day increase there so far. Russia registered over 20,000 new cases and 364 related deaths in one day. In Germany, data from the Robert Koch Institute show over 23,000 more people contracted disease, pushing the national tally to 642,000. Europe is currently the hardest hit zone in the world, with more than 12 million cases. A steep rise in infections has prompted many countries to impose stricter measures to contain the virus across the continent. Protest rallies against the government's handling of the pandemic crisis have continued in Italy. Anger taxi drivers set the stage two rallies in Rome, urging the executives to support their sector with subsidies. Max Chivity has more from Rome.
On Friday, taxi drivers went on a one-day strike nationwide, calling the government's attention to the economic plight they're facing following the pandemic crisis and the connected restrictions. Unions also called two protests held in front of the economy and transport ministries, attended by thousands of taxi drivers from across the country. Drivers are demanding more support from the government as, quote, they don't have the money to pay the monthly costs of the vehicles, nor to provide for their families.
The subsidies we have received from the government so far are totally inadequate. €275 each month is not sufficient. How are we supposed to put food on the table for our families? Consider we have suffered losses in the range of 80 to 90%.
My income has dropped by 80%, but all expenses have remained unvaried. Insurance fees, fuel and car disinfection costs have not been reduced. Furthermore, the government is doing nothing to stop illegal cabs from going around.
A new three-tier restriction system came into force on Friday. As a result, four Italian regions, namely Calabria, Lombardy, Piedmont and Val d'Aosta, have been placed in soft lockdowns. The government has also imposed a nationwide curfew from 10 p.m. until 5 a.m., requiring all museums and galleries to shut down and all shopping centers to close on weekends.
Protests against the new anti-COVID restrictions imposed by the government have been staged in a number of cities across Italy. Some demonstrations turned violent as protesters vented their frustration and anger over how the pandemic crisis has been handled.
The virus is a moving train. Today it is necessary to slow it down, otherwise the train will knock us down. We are hopeful that these measures will be limited to several weeks.
The new restrictions imposed by the Italian government apply for about 4 weeks until December 3. Max Civili, Rome.
The British government's role in propping up Bahrain regime is common knowledge, but names are now surfacing. Reports saying that influential British figures have been advising King Hamad in order to solidify their strategic alliance. Bianca Rahimi has a report.
On the 14th of March 2011, Bahraini security forces began a violent crackdown on protests demanding greater political participation, free and fair elections, and an end to corruption and equality for the country's suppressed Shia majority. It has now been revealed that the UK's top military officer, General Sir David Richards, was in Manama holding meetings with the country's senior military officials and the Crown Prince 5 days earlier. In the brutal crackdown, Bahrain security forces were backed by 1,000 UK-trained and equipped Saudi troops. Since then, almost all prominent human rights defenders and dissidents have been jailed, silenced, or forced into permanent exile. The main opposition party, Al-Wefaq, has been dissolved, and the country's only independent newspaper, Al-Wasat, forcibly closed down. Torture is widespread in Bahrain's prisons, especially for the purpose of extracting confessions that are used to sentence people to death. And the country has the largest number of political prisoners in relation to population.
We have interviewed people, men, women and children, who have been tortured by the regime. Children who have been snatched from the streets by armed gangs and have been then beaten and driven around the streets. One boy had his teeth knocked in, and they are forced then to inform on family members or friends or people that they know in the villages who have attended democratic protests or have attended political gatherings. Inside the prisons, people have been waterboarded. They've been beaten with truncheons on their bare bodies and on their feet. They've been hung for hours, days, and deprived of sleep. They have been anally raped with truncheons. They have been just the cruelest, most inhumane treatment.
Nonetheless, the British government continues to support the regime. When construction began on a new permanent naval base in Bahrain in 2015, then UK Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond said this.
This will give us the flexibility to respond to any emerging challenge in the Gulf, whether it's from a state actor or a non-state actor, whether it's from within the Gulf or outside the Gulf. This enhances our range. It gives Britain a permanent naval base east of Suez for the first time since 1967.
Strategic interests seem to be Westminster's priority. According to Human Rights Watch, arbitrary arrests, torture, executions and forced disappearances continue with very little interference from so-called democracies. Bianca Rahimi, London.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you for joining us on today's episode of The Lantern. Alhamdulillah rabbil alameen. We feel incredibly blessed to have you with us and to have the words and the guidance of the Holy Quran and our infallible leaders as our ever-shining lantern in life to guide us during times of darkness and when we are at a loss of for what to do in life, when we're standing at crossroads and just, you know, trying to become better people. We don't necessarily always have to refer to them when we are like in a huge trouble, you know. Let's hear a short story about the whole concept of listening more than we speak, about the concept of hearing people out and keeping their secrets, about the concept of consulting other people without judging them, and unconditional compassion. And we're going to be right back.
Dear friends, so welcome to this program entitled Lantern. As usual, we start with an interesting story. The title of today's story is The Three Types of People. Let's see what happened in this story. A teacher shows three toys to a student and asks the student to find out the differences. All the three toys seem to be identical in their shape, size, and material. After keen observation, the student observes holes in the toys. First toy has holes in the ears. The second toy has holes in ear and mouth. The third toy has only one hole in one ear. Then with the help of the needle, the student puts the needle in the ear hole of the first toy. The needle comes out from the other ear. In the second toy, when the needle was put in the ear, the needle came out of a mouth. And in the third toy, when the needle was put in, the needle did not come out. The first toy represents those people around you who gives an impression that they are listening to you, all your things, and care for you. But they just pretend to do so. After listening, as the needle comes out from the next ear, the things you said to them by counting on them are gone. So be careful while you are speaking with this type of people around you, who does not care for you. The second toy represents those people who listen to you, all your things, and it gives an impression that they care for you. But as in the toy, the needle comes out from a mouth. These people will use your things and the words you tell them against you by telling it to others and bringing out the confidential issues for their own purpose. The third toy the needle does not come out from them. These kinds of people will keep the trust you have in them. They are the ones who you can count on.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
I'm sure in life you've come across some people that you found that they're just really good listeners, you know? For me, that applies to my mom. For me, that applies to my best friend. Sometimes I'm not even looking for a solution. Sometimes I just need to think out loud and tell another soul about the things that are raging a storm inside of me in order to take the load off my shoulders a little bit. And also, when you think out loud, it feels like you hear yourself process a thought, and then you are capable of working through that thought better. I don't know if you guys have ever experienced that before, but often I feel like when I think out loud and when I utter my thoughts, it's much easier for me to make a decision to either dismiss that thought as totally ridiculous when I hear myself say it, or, you know, put it into perspective for me. And of course, there are conditions. Islam gives us conditions, because at the end of the day, Islam isn't necessarily all about haram and halal, obligations and things that we should avoid in order not to go to hell. Islam is a lifestyle, you know, and it's about bettering ourselves and becoming better human beings through whatever that means, and in every situation of life. It gives us teachings and guidelines from the moment we are born, what our parents should do for us in order to safeguard our salvation, whether it's, you know, saying the adhan in our ears, again, ears, very key point in today's discussion, or, you know, the sounds and the voices and the noises we surround ourselves with on a daily basis as we grow up. We've been taught to hear the Quran, make ourselves familiar with the Quran. The Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam have said that impart our teachings to your children from an early age, because a young person's heart is like a pristine, fresh land, and whatever you put into it, whatever you throw into it, basically will grow, rather than like a person who is basically set in their ways and have become a strong, sturdy oak tree by this point. It's obviously much, much harder to try to teach an old dog new tricks, you know? So talking about certain rules, Islam basically teaches us that pick our friends wisely. And to an extent, where Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam says that if you want to know a person, check out the company he keeps. You know, the people he surrounds himself with. If he surrounds himself with a bunch of irreligious, reckless, irresponsible people who are materialistic, totally superficial, not only don't pay attention, but don't even believe in a concept such as the hereafter, judgment day, resurrection, being held accountable for your actions, and they spend their lives pursuing worldly, materialistic pleasures and means and lust and, you know, collecting wealth and this and that. Well, it's kind of easy to tell what kind of person this guy is, right? Obviously, he's no Ayatollah Behjet if he wants to surround himself with a bunch of, you know, superficial people. But if a person actively surrounds themselves with, you know, scholars, learned people, people who remind them of God, which is another narration from Amir al-Mu'mineen, that your best friend is someone who reminds you of God, people who are actively helping each other get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then you can tell that this person really wants to become a better person. And one of the greatest efforts they make for that is surrounding themselves with those who encourage them and motivate them to better themselves. Among those people that we should surround ourselves with are trustworthy people. Because here's the thing. Someone might seem to be our friend just because, you know, we work in the same place or we go to class together. We sometimes grab a coffee with them after work, after class, after whatever. And, you know, during those moments, we find ourselves consulting with them. We find ourselves talking to them, opening up to them. But just because they're an acquaintance doesn't necessarily mean that we can trust them and we can share our life secrets with them. Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam has said, "The thing about secrets is that as long as you keep it to yourself, you're in control of it. But the moment it leaves your mouth, it is in control of you. And the person who has the most control over you is someone who knows your secrets." And that's why His Eminence has said, don't tell all your secrets even to your closest of friends, because you never know when that friendship could end for whatever the reason. Your friendship doesn't necessarily have to end because you had this huge fight or anything. Maybe maybe one of you moves to another country, and you know that distance that is created could cause your friendship to wane. And during that time, a person might, if they are not a genuinely trustworthy person, they might not feel so responsible toward your secrets anymore. And on the other hand, His Eminence says, don't give all your wrath and fury and attitude to your enemy either, because you don't know, maybe that enemy could turn into a friend as well. You should always leave this safe space for your friends and for your enemies alike. Thank you so very much for being with us on today's episode of The Lantern. May your moments be blessed. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
ألا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب
Aperture
Bilderberg Group consists of between 120 to 150 powerful people who meet for 3 days once a year to discuss foreign policy. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. Now, since 1954, the Bilderberg Group has been gathering in secret to discuss everything from the rise and fall of communism to nuclear warfare to cybersecurity. The group began as a way to create more cooperation between Europe and North America during the Cold War. Bilderberg releases an annual list of people who will attend and topics they will discuss, but beyond that, little leaves the walls of the meeting rooms. We disclose the truth behind the group's agenda.
We are endowed by our Creator with rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which nobody, no person, no group, no political party, not even our government, can take away from us.
Hitler had a dream that his big business should dominate the world. He called his dream the New Order.
We've already amended the Constitution dozens of times. Let's throw it away for a master plan run by a master state.
Morgan is the largest group. Then there is the strong Kuhn-Loeb group. The Mellon interests, which have Westinghouse, DuPont with General Motors, and then there is Rockefeller and three other groups, making up a grand total of some $82 billion assets in 1945. 8 groups control the American economy, not only because of their concentration of wealth, but through their strategic ownership of basic industries. In spite of war, these companies operate internationally through subsidiaries, stock participation, and cartel agreements with various other companies.
Have you ever heard of the Bilderberg Group?
No.
Yeah. No, never.
No, I haven't.
No, I haven't heard of that.
I don't know too much about that Bilderberg thing.
Have you guys ever heard about a group called the Bilderberg Group?
No.
Yeah, for the most part.
I have not.
Sounds kind of familiar, but I couldn't tell you what it was.
No, never heard of them.
Have you ever heard of a group called the Bilderberg Group? No, I haven't.
The Bilderberg?
Well, what would you say if I told you it's a group of about 120 people on average who meet once a year? These are politicians, heads of media, military men, heads of finance. They meet once a year in secret, behind closed doors, discussing foreign policy. What would you think?
What would I think?
Yeah. Do you think that's a good thing, a bad thing? Do you agree with it, disagree? Is there anything wrong with some of the most powerful and influential people in the world meeting behind closed doors and discussing things in secret?
It's a smart thing to get as many brains in a room as you can to discuss things. And if you're going to have open and honest dialogue, sometimes that information should be kept within the room. If they're going to make good and careful decisions on political initiatives, they need to be able to meet with the brightest minds in the country, and I don't think necessarily that we need to be inside that meeting.
I just tend not to recognize their power and just to, like, pretend they don't exist, because for all intents and purposes, they don't in my world. Like, no matter how much harm they do or how much good they think they do, I really couldn't care less.
In the spring of 1954, Joseph Redinger, Polish political advisor and founder of the European movement that would lead to the founding of the European Union, started the Bilderberg Group, an informal and off-the-record conference for political and business elites from European and Western nations. With the help of Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, along with other powerful politicians and businessmen, they organized the first annual Bilderberg meeting at the Hotel de Bilderberg in Oosterbeek, Netherlands. The Prince, a former executive for IG Farben and a former Nazi SS party member before the war, was also an influential executive in the oil industry, working for Royal Dutch Petroleum. As a member of the Dutch royal family and the father of the current matriarch and fellow Bilderberger Queen Beatrix, Bernhard was a very powerful and influential member of the European community. The original stated goals of the Bilderberg Group were to bring together the leaders of business, finance, and politicians from Europe and Western nations in a forum that would allow for candid and frank discussions of international issues, without the fear of being quoted or recorded. Thus, the meetings are held in secret and are by invitation only. For almost 60 years, the Bilderberg Group has been meeting behind closed doors in luxury hotels around the world, to discuss in secret their plan for global control of world events and markets. Over the years, their members have included heads of state, politicians, business executives, media moguls, global financiers, military leaders, intelligence agencies, and many other powerful organizations and individuals whose reach extends to every corner of the world. Some notable members have included the Rothschild banking family, Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, Prince Philip and Prince Charles of the British royal family, international financier David Rockefeller, and former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. The members of the Bilderberg Group have such an influence over the media that until recent years, their name and existence has been quietly kept from the general public through a veritable media blackout. With the advent of new social media tools and advances in technology, the independent media has been exposing these annual meetings on an increasing scale. We have reached the turning point. The Bilderberg Group is now finding it almost impossible to stay out of the spotlight and hide their powerful cabal from the public.
could talk about the 99%, but it's really the 99.99999%, because the people that are in here, they're not one out of 100, they're not one out of 1,000, they're not one out of 10,000, 100,000, they're more like one out of 1 million or 10 million, or beyond that. Okay? That's right. It's the billionaire and trillionaire club, and you and I, we're not in it, we're not ever going to be in it. So we got to hold their feet to the fire. We've got to expose what's going on here. We've got to find out who the 2012 attendees are, and we've got to keep our eyes on the headlines in the next coming weeks, months, and even years to see what these associations have done geopolitically, because they'll be in the headlines. When you have someone like Davignon claiming, and not really claiming because he's on the inside, he would know better than you and I, that the Bilderberg Group was instrumental in creating the European Union and the Euro. I would say that's a pretty big deal. And whether that's evil or not, that's a geopolitical move. And that decision was made by this group.
What you need to do is look up who are the companies they work for, who else have they worked for, what are their agendas, what are they in the news doing. That will tell you so much about the reach of Bilderberg, about why they invite these people, and about how they put the world together. In the case of Europe, you heard that, quote, Goldman Sachs rules the world, where you've got Peter Sutherland, head of Goldman Sachs International Board of Directors out of Ireland. He's telling them to accept the austerity and the other financial plans.
Throughout history, we've had people with power attempting to consolidate their power and hold on to it. So that's really the agenda here. The agenda is to stay as powerful as possible for as long as possible and crush any competition.
In recent years, the lack of coverage from the mainstream media on the Bilderberg Group has been a problem as far as raising awareness about these conferences. However, 2012 is a major turning point for the Bilderberg Group, as the independent media have been here providing the coverage that's been lacking from the mainstream.
Where's Fox News been for the last 15 years? CNN for the last 20 years? Why does Sean Hannity ridicule anybody that calls in and asks about the significance of the Bilderberg Group? Obviously, they're on the payroll. When people say that, quote, they control the media, they're talking about the secret establishment.
I'm just here to cover the Bilderberg conference and try to do what the mainstream media is lacking. It's not fair to say that there's no coverage of Bilderberg, because even some of the Bilderberg-owned outlets in the mainstream media have covered it, but it's been so far and few between that I think it's important for us as people, as citizens, and as journalists, as professionals, to come down here ourselves and investigate it.
I'm definitely down here just to protest the real 1% that's meeting here at the Westfields Marriott behind closed doors. We're not seeing any major media out here.
Where's CNN? Where's the mainstream media? Where's Fox, MSNBC? Any of these stations, they are not here.
The mainstream media is owned by these people. There's only a handful of what you call mainstream media covering this, because this isn't supposed to exist. Our media, until just about 5 years ago, said that Bilderberg did not even exist.
It's been definitely incredible seeing so many people come all over the world just to participate in bringing awareness to the Bilderberg Group. It's by far the largest Bilderberg protest that I have ever seen. A lot of alternative media, a lot of attention being brought to the Bilderbergers. The mainstream media is failing, but the alternative people's media is becoming the mainstream media, and we're proving that by covering Bilderberg.
We want to make sure that we can get documentation of the attendees just to have confirmation of who is in attendance. Once you know, you can absolutely confirm who is in attendance. You can have a better feel for what are some of the things that are going to be discussed.
The Bilderberg Group was founded by Nazis after World War II with their European cohorts in the United States to try to bring in a one world government. These people are terrorists, 110%. The government has been usurped and completely hijacked. The United States flag is not hanging upside down in distress. The flag was taken a long time ago.
Yeah! The Washington Post was here this morning. They've known about it since the very beginning, because their founders, Katherine Graham, and now her son, Donald Graham, come every single year without fail.
They're not talking about it. We have to. We will. And people are paying attention to that. And they're starting to trust us. And every day we're getting bigger and bigger.
The media moguls here that do participate at the Bilderberg meeting are failing. They're not successful at all in any way, shape, or form. Their businesses, their whole enterprises are failing. And what you see is people rising up.
There has
has to be at least 500 people here now. And the veteran who was arrested yesterday was just arrested again. There's large people gathering in front of where the Bilderberg members inside the building can actually hear the people outside. And that's where a group of police officers grabbed this guy, same guy from yesterday. And it appears that they are making an example and trying to keep everybody away from the area where the people inside can definitely hear everything that is going on.
We're bullhorning the Bilderberg. They send cops down to stand behind us. We turn, and they just arrest somebody for no reason to get us to chase them down the street. They grab him, take him away like prey. We run out and follow after.
The whole world is watching! The whole world is watching!
This group is meeting with government officials. It violates federal law, the Logan Act. And for decades, they said it didn't even exist. This is the real oligarchs that run our government, run Europe, run most of the world, the big central banks, and the fraud that they engage in. These are the real tyrants. So we're identifying them, not the puppet presidents and prime ministers. We're going directly to the financial oligarch, the robber barons.
In 2008, it was revealed that the Canadian government, under the leadership of Bilderberg member Stephen Harper, would be buying $25 billion worth of mortgage pools through the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation. Shortly after the election in October of 2008, the re-elected Harper Conservatives unilaterally announced the government will purchase up to an additional $50 billion of insured mortgage pools by the end of the fiscal year as a part of its ongoing efforts to maintain the availability of longer-term credit in Canada. This action will increase to $75 billion, the maximum value of securities purchased through Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation. There was no debate in the Canadian Parliament over whether to hand out $75 billion in taxpayer money to the private chartered banks, nor was it covered by the Bilderberg-controlled mainstream media. The control of the Bilderberg Group extends not only to the media and the control of information, but also to the Canadian banking system itself and our ability to control our own currency. In 1938, Prime Minister William Lyon Mackenzie King nationalized the Bank of Canada, giving control of the Canadian currency to the people of Canada. Although the issuance of currency is held solely by the Bank of Canada, the creation of credit through the issuance of loans is still largely controlled by private chartered banks. As part of the Bank of Canada's charter, the government can borrow up to 50% of its own money from the Bank of Canada at 0% interest. The other half of the interest is paid back into the government, allowing for the financing of our own infrastructure, such as the St. Lawrence Seaway and the Trans-Canada Highway. Because of Bilderberg member Paul Martin, Canada now borrows its money from the private chartered banks at the going interest rate, effectively handing over the usury and interest to private corporations. Prior to Prime Minister Brian Mulroney, all banks had to hold an 8% reserve, meaning they could lend out the same money 12.5 times through credit and loans. Mulroney dropped this to a 0% reserve, allowing private banks to loan as much money as they want simply by entering a new line on a ledger. Currently, the Bank of Canada is only responsible for 5% of the actual debt created in the form of currency. The private chartered banks, such as Royal Bank of Canada and TD Bank, own the remaining 95% of all debt. Think of how much control this amounts to when you consider all of the digital payment and loan options used today, such as credit cards, debit cards, internet payments, RFID chips, smartphone purchases, and even biometric identification, which is now used in India for bank withdrawals. Very few people use real currency, and the trend is turning to an increasing reliance on digital and computer technologies, of which are largely controlled by members of the Bilderberg Group. Members of the Bilderberg Group who are involved in the Canadian banking system include President and CEO of Royal Bank of Canada, Gordon Nixon. President and CEO of TD Bank Financial Group, Edmund Clark. Deputy Chair of TD Bank Financial Group and former Canadian Ambassador to the United States, Frank McKenna. Former Minister of Finance and Director of Manulife Financial, Michael Wilson. Managing Director of Credit Suisse Securities, Ronald S. Lloyd. Former CEO of Scotiabank, Peter C. Godsoe. Former Governor of the Bank of Canada, David A. Dodge. And Governor of the Bank of Canada and former Goldman Sachs executive, Mark Carney.
501c3 tax-exempt foundations have to make certain forms publicly available. And so somebody tipped me off about this, that the 990 forms are available for the Bilderberg Group. And I got the years 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010. Well, first of all, they're operating under the 501c3 tax-exempt name American Friends of Bilderberg. The 2008 forms also show a list of very interesting donors. Henry Kissinger, $20,000. David Rockefeller, $50,000. Freeport McMoRan Foundation, $10,000. Microsoft, $75,000. Peter Thiel from PayPal, $75,000. Goldman Sachs, $25,000. The Washington Post, $25,000. So, of course, the Washington Post is going to be reluctant to report on them when they are literally funding them, and I have the proof in my hand.
Other large donors of the Bilderberg Group include $25,000 from Lazard, a large investment bank which is based in New York's Rockefeller Center. Lazard is one of the key players in the Bilderberg finances, attending dozens of meetings over the years. Another large donor and regular attendee to Bilderberg is co-founder of Kohlberg Kravis Roberts & Company, Henry Kravis. KKR is a private equity firm with over $62 billion in assets as of 2011. Kravis donated $50,000 in 2008 to the Bilderberg Group. Billionaire financier David Rockefeller of the bank has been a steady donor to the Bilderberg meetings and has been a cornerstone of the group's development, attending nearly every conference since its inception in 1954. Rockefeller is an honorary lifetime chairman of the Bilderberg Group and has been involved in the development of many other powerful globalist think tanks, such as the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations. In 1965, David Rockefeller gave a speech to the International Industrial Conference in San Francisco, where he said, "We have entered upon an era in which interdisciplinary cooperation on a worldwide basis must be the cornerstone of accomplishment. Each of us has the duty to fashion his own contribution to fit the grand design of a global community. For many of us, the marketplace of tomorrow will be no less than this whole planet of Earth. What we do will manifest itself in ways that we cannot foretell, and it will have an unforeseen impact upon individual lives and whole societies. What we are is God's gift to man. What we become is man's gift to God."
The Rockefeller-Rothschild merger that just occurred yesterday obviously had some things in the works before then, but for those that don't know, the Rothschilds have bought up 37% of the main financial institute of the Rockefellers. They're going to be talking about swallowing up smaller financial institutions, like they say in the article. Essentially, they see opportunity in crisis. And we've known some smaller banks, a lot of smaller banks, have gone down in the last 2 or 3 years. Well, now they're consolidating power. They're going to buy up those smaller banks, and don't be surprised if you see them bail out or take a large stake in some of the bigger banks that have been having problems, such as maybe even Bank of America and JP Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.